Okay, today's daf is daf Yud Gimel, and we were in the middle of the sugya about figuring out what happens if somebody was mekadesh with a mat. It turned out it's worth less than a shavah pruta. The mekabelet kiddushin is then subsequently informed that there's this diamond ring hidden inside the mat. And the question is whether shtika in that circumstances. She doesn't say I'm a kabbalah the kiddush. She doesn't give it back, doesn't say anything. Whether that's considered to be kiddush or not. So Rava said that it's considered to be shtika le'achar matan ma'od. And if there's shtika afterwards, then we don't say that that defines the nature of the netinah. It would have to be before he gave the mat that he would make that clear. Somebody smoking in here or something? It can't be.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
This
smells like smoke, doesn't it? Yeah. Somebody walked in with a jacket.
Yeah.
Huh.
We're on to one of
these. Mm-hmm. All right.
Lawrence!
Alon hasn't been bad, has he?
Plenty coughing.
So this,
Hey, Mitch. How you doing? Where have you been? What's more important, school or me? Don't answer.
Yeah.
So then, Rava brought a raya from the case of the similar case of the Sela, but the Gemara says there's a tremendous difference. And this was the last thing that we had, was the Rav Huna's Taina, Rav Huna Bereda Rav Yeshua, said it's not comparable in this case. The case that we're talking about, she accepted it, B'Torat Kiddushin. And in the case that you're bringing a proof from, he had given her something initially, not B'Torat Kiddushin at all. He had given her a Sela to keep for him, to take care of for him. So over there, I understand that there's no way she can just throw it back at him. She came over here, was giving him the Torah Kiddushin. If she changes her mind, she doesn't want the Kiddushin, and now she's not interested in the diamond ring, so she should have so indicated. Maybe in this case, shtika would be okay, even though it's achar matan ma'od. That was the question that we had left off with. And now, today, the Gemara wants to know what indeed is the halach, because Rabbi Choy wasn't persuaded 100% by that question, if you recall. And he said, look, it could be she's not sure how she's supposed to respond. She was caught off guard. So we're up to now that Sholcha Rav Acha Bar Rav Lakami de Ravina, which is one third of the way down. So Sholcha Rav Acha Bar Rav Lakami de Ravina Kai Gavna Mai. He wanted to know, Rav Acha Bar Rav wanted to know whether we should paskin like Rav Huna Bereda Rav Yehoshua, who argued on Rava and said that the proof that Rav is bringing is insufficient proof, because it's talking about a case where the original acceptance was not the Shem Kiddushin, or whether we should paskin like Rav and we not have to be cautious there was a Kiddushin at all, because it's shtikal achar matan ma'ot, and therefore the Kiddushin was not a Shavah Prut, and boom, nothing to worry about. So he sent the Shaila to Kameid Ravina. He wanted to know what Ravina's opinion was about Kahai Gav Namai. What would be in such a case? Halacha L'maaseh, what would you paskin in your best? Shalach Leisu, he said to him, look, I got to tell you that I have a great deal of respect for Rav Huna Bereda Rav Yehoshua, but I never heard this from Rav Huna Bereda Rav Yehoshua. When he said that Rava's proof was insufficient, he said it to you maybe, or you heard it from somebody that said it in his name. I never heard it. As far as I'm concerned, it's irrelevant. I'm not going to pay any attention to it. Rava makes a great deal of sense. Shtikalach matan ma'ot is meaningless. However, I do understand that you have a lot of respect for him, and you did hear it for him. You said that you heard it from him. So, Aton, the Shmielachu, you, who are Makabalists, and he's your Rebbe, Choshua. Look, you'll have to be Machmer because of his opinion that at least it's a Suffolk Kiddushin, and therefore you require a get. But I personally got to tell you, it doesn't bother me. I think that it's not a Kiddushin. Hayitta, there was a woman, Davika Mezavna Varshechi. She used to walk around the street, you see, she would sell these little ribbons that she'd designed. Shatahu Gav, a guy comes along and he grabs one of her ribbons. An old boyfriend, you know. She grabs one of the ribbons being up. So she starts shouting, hey, give that back. I'm like, well, I might consider giving it back. If you would accept it as kedushin, you can have it back. So he says, even alech, mikadishli, if I give it back to you, we're okay, that's it. Shkalte, she grabs it, v'ishtika, takes it from him, and she's quiet. So Reb Nachman said, Omer Reb Nachman, yechola lameimah, she can say, well, of course I took it. Why wouldn't I take it? It's mine. In shakli v'didi shakli. I didn't say that I accepted the kedushin. I just took it back. Eitvei Rava l'Reb Nachman. So Rava asked Reb Nachman the following case. Brighter. Kitcha begezel ubechamas ubegineva. Gezel means something that's taken at a point of a gun. Chamas means you take it, but you pay for it. And geneva is that you burglarize it. But in any, we're going to see later on, towards the end of the Masechta, that all of these cases are talking about where the ganav was from the woman herself that he's trying to be mekadesh.
He
steals it from her. then he gives it back. But that's unimportant right now. Because the next case says so beferish. You know, I love you. You make me crazy when you So he grabs the sela right out of her hand. And then he gives it back to her. Vikitra, he gives it back to her. So the din over there is that she is Makudasha. Why? I thought you said she could say in shakri, but it is shakri, which means it's my own thing. Now obviously the Gemara holds that what this means is that if she accepts it as kedushin, essentially means, look, I'm really mochelet. Yeah, you know, okay, fine. You know, we're friends. Okay, it's cute. You stole my ribbon, now you're going to come back with me. Okay, yeah, very sweet. So, yeah, all right, fine, I accept it. Now you see over here that she can be mekabelet kedushin. So how come you, Reb Nachman, claim that in this case of the ribbon, that she can say, no, look, I just took it back because I want my thing. I'm not going to take a douche from it. So must be the difference is like this, says Reb Nachman. Hatam b'dishadich, and that's different. It's talking about that they were friends before. It talked about marriage. And because of that, in the context of accepting something from the guy, where he says he's giving it back to her, even though he grabbed it out of her hands before, there, yes, but the case over here where a guy's just playing games and walking through the market and grabs it out of her basket and now says, I'll be mekadesh with it, that's not considered to be an acceptance of kedushin. How can I show you that the halacha recognizes that difference? Normally we know that, of course, if somebody's mekadesh in the context of discussing kedushin, then he doesn't even have to say, I read Mekadesh. If he hands over money, hands over a ring, whatever, she takes it, it's understood that since it's a direct continuation of our conversation, so there are Isaac, we had that before, Isaac b'mili de Kedushin. Shadich is not the same thing as Isaac b'mili de Kedushin. Shadich means that people have discussed this as a shidduch, they've gone out, and it's not like coming out of nowhere. But it's not that they've been in the middle of discussing Kedushin, he grabs it and gives it to her. So how do I know that has a halachic validity, the fact that they have been also discussed it before, and they are talking about the ultimate commitment to marriage. They just weren't holding right now. I'll prove it to you. The Tanya. Omar la can see sela zosh ani chayev. Look, this is a continuation. The cases we had before. So the case started, if you recall, where the guy gives her a sela, and he tells her, take care of this for me. This is my wallet. I'd like you to watch it for me. I'm sure nothing happens. And then he says to her, you know what? Why don't you just keep it and be mekudesh it for me? In this case, it's the sela, not that's his. It's a sela that he owes her. So he says, take this. Here's the sela that I owe you. She takes it. And then v'chazar v'amarla. And then he says to her, I want you to be mekudesh it with it. So if he says that b'shat matan ma'od, when he's giving it to her, so then, if ratzta, mekudesh it, fine. Even though it was money that was owed her, so she's saying, now I'm not taking it as the money that I owe you, but rather as money for kedushin, fine. But if lo ratzta, if she doesn't want the kedushin, then it's not kedushin, which we're going to discuss in a moment, because that's an idiotic statement. I mean, on the surface, obviously, if she doesn't want kedushin, it's not kedushin. I mean, that can't mean that. So we'll see. That becomes the key to Reb Nachman's raya, actually. But if liachar matan, if she already handed it over to her, then even if she says beferish, yes, I want to take this as kedusha, it's not mekudesha. But that's because the case is completely different. The original case that we had, the money that was given to her to watch was not hers. Now she has a wallet from somebody else. The guy says, okay, now keep the wallet, be mekudesh, that's fine. But over here, once she got this money, it's hers, because he was giving it to her the money that he owed her. So then for sure, it's not going to help in that case. By the way, there is a machlokas about whether in the previous case where he grabs the ribbon, or the case, if that would be kedusha, in the case in the Braita, where it says he grabs the selah from her hand, whether it's really mechila, or whether she expects him to pay her back. But it's just that right now, this ribbon is yours. You loan me the money for the ribbon. Now you want to go out and be mekadesh me? You mean mekadesh me? In the case of the seller, you loan me for the seller. Okay, you don't have any money now. You want to be mekadesh? I'll give you the ring. You pay me for the ring. That's perfectly okay. But sort of, if I'm a dealer in rings and I give you the ring that you're going to be using to be mekadesh me, and then I'll bill you for it, of course. I mean, you know, there's business and love. According to Yerushalmi, so in a chinami. He owes her the money. It's not mechila means she doesn't owe the money. Yeah, but that's about Lucas had to learn to discuss. But in any event, what's important over here, Taizer Nachman, I want you to explain to me what the word ratzta or lo ratzta means. Wants or doesn't want? I mean, ilima ratzta, does ratzta mean she says, yes, I do, to eat? And lo ratzta, she says, no, I don't want it. So what would that imply? In other words, so if she's just quiet, but she doesn't say anything, she just takes it, she accepts it. Her ishtiki, havi kedusha, and if she would just be quiet, it would be a kosher kedusha. So then why do you have to say ratzta or lo ratzta? Then just say, he gave it to her, she's mekudeshet. I mean, you certainly don't have to tell me that a woman who doesn't want to be mekudeshet is not mekudeshet. I mean, that's a joke. So I don't have to say it for that. If ratzta includes the ishtika alone, would be kedusha. So then, don't say anything. Because we always have the cases like that. Mekudeshet. Nasana mekudeshet. So what's this ratzta mekudeshet? So then all you have to do is nitni mekudeshet stam. Because that's exactly what it said before in the Braita that we first brought when we brought the part about the selah. Didn't start saying ratzta lo ratzta. It just said mekudeshet. So say mekudeshet. Ela. It's got to be that the case over here is ratzta means that she indicates verbally, yes, I do want it. Lo ratzta means she did not so indicate, meaning she was quiet. So then already it's a chiddush. That unless she specifically says, yes, I do want the kedushin is chal, is in chal. The katani, so it says over here that in that case, she's ishtika, she would not mekudesh it. How do you explain that? So why did she accept it? Obviously, because she could say, of course I accepted it, because it's my own coin. In shakli, v'didin shakli, I took it, and I took it for myself. It's my own. So then you'll ask me the same question you asked on me when I told you the case of the ribbons. So you'll say, aha, so what do we do with that other case where it was kitcha begezel, or b'chamas, or b'gneva, or shechataf selam yada v'kitcha? How come over there it says mekudeshet? So now, baby, don't look at me. You got the problem. Originally you were saying, well, you, Reb Nachman, make up this halacha, and you're in the bright that says otherwise. Now I'm bringing you a bright that says the halacha. Now you got a contradiction to bright. Okay, how are you going to get out of it? So obviously, the only way to get out of it is context. It must be that one case is talking about Habit HaShadach and Habit HaLoshadach. What are you going to say? So that's all that I'm saying. I'm not telling you no big tradition. I'm making up myself. Elalav Shmamina Habit HaShadach, Habit HaLoshadach. And that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's enough of an indication.
No comment.
Is it raining,
Jesse? No, it's seen at all.
You can sign that out. You don't know if you can go to the ball. Just keep the next one.
Whole concerts have been interrupted and stopped because of that kind of behavior. Kinoch Mavshe de Rav Asi. Now, when Rav Asi was nifter, so the Rabbanim were afraid that they were going to forget some of his learning, some of his teaching. So, Ayla Rabbanim Luna Kutina Lishmaite. So, the Rabbanim made an assembly where they would gather together all of his teachings so that they wouldn't be forgotten. And this way, anybody who knew something that had been said over by Rav Asi would report it, and people would write it down for themselves, and that way they would know. So one of the people in attendance, whose name is Rabbi Yaakov Shmi, he said, Achi Amar Ravasi, I'll tell you, Ravasi quoted Ramani as saying the following, Kishem she'ini shaniknet b'pachot b'shava pruta, kach en karka niknet b'pachot b'shava pruta. So in the same way that you cannot be kona with less than a shava pruta, you can't be kona karka with less than a shava pruta. The Tosfos says, this is a little weird, because the only reason that we know that a woman can be nikneis at all because it is from kicha, kicha means stay from, which means that the given is the karka, and the yisha is learned out of the karka, not vice versa. I mean, the only way we came up with the idea of a pruta was bechlal, because we know that kinyan kesef requires minimal value. Minimal value is a pruta. That we know from the karka. I mean, this whole thing is reversed. Why would you say it like this? So Stasis, maybe he didn't hold of the limud from kicha kicha, and he learned it out from ein kesef. Ein kesef ladon zava, yesh kesef ladon achera. So that Mimela, he wanted to apply it to the case of the karka. He says, it's also... sometimes the derech of the Gemara is, and it's interesting, the Rambam does this a lot, that even though something is not necessarily the makor, when he's presenting something, he'll present the simplest thing first, even though it might have been logically derived from the Gemara in the opposite order. Or he'll take a pusik that the Gemara doesn't use for a limud, and he'll make that pusik the source of the limud. And people are always disturbed by this, but the truth is that the point is that after you see the whole picture, it's clear that all of the earlier indications that may not have been absolutely provable are now seen to be, now we understand that, yes, that is what it means. So now you can use any of them as the indication of the presentation that you want to make. He's not coming to tell you the makar necessarily that the Gemara uses. He says it could be that over here in the it's the derech of the Gemara. Even though you could sit back and ask on it, but you say the thing that's poshut. We've just been discussing the dinner of Shavar Pruta by Anisha. So that's the given. So now I'm pointing out to you the same thing is true by Karka. Omrule v'atanya afa pisha Anisha niknei v'pochot mishavar Pruta Karka niknei v'pochot mishavar Pruta. So they said to him, well, it's not even true, because we learn in a Braita that you can be kona Karka with less than a Shavar Pruta. So he said to them all, yeah, of course, but Kitanyayi Bechalipin, that's talking about making a kinyan, not a kinyan of kesef, but a kinyan of chalipin, which is where you exchange something, you give your handkerchief. So it's a formal kinyan, which we saw earlier doesn't apply to kinyan Isha, because that was a machlokas rashi. And Tosis, remember, Isha lo mekanya, pachat mishavar pruta, mekanya nafsha, pachat mishavar pruta. But yes, he says, that's the point. You'll never find a kiddushin that's using any of the set of formalized kinyonim that have to do with an item, which would include either kesef or chalipin. You'll never find chalipin by nisha, but you will find chalipin by karka. Chalipin is less than a shomer pruta. That's all that it means. The tanya, and indeed it says, konin bekli, you can use any type of item. Use a handkerchief, or afa pishem or shomer pruta, can be something tiny. Use a safety pin. You use somebody a pin and exchange the pin, and that should now be the act of the kinyan of the karka. Obviously, the value of the karka, you already transferred mid-electronic transfer into his bank account. That's not the issue. But how do we formalize the transaction? We can formalize the transaction with less than shavar pruta too. And that's all that it's talking about. And then they sat, and we're saying over another teaching, and the other teaching went like this. That Hodi Omer of Yudah Omer Shmuel. So this is something that we saw a lot before in Gittin. Famous mimer. That Kol Sheini Yodea B'Tiv Gittin V'Kedushin Lo Yelo Esek Imar. If you're not an absolute expert in the dinim of Gittin and Kedushin, just mind your own business and don't answer any shailos. Have anything to do with that issue. Because since it's such an important issue, and if you make a mistake, you end up maybe being maternatious ish. That means you're creating mamzerim. So now 20 years later, you'll say, oh, I'm really sorry. You know, tell that to all the little mamzerim that you created by your little psak. So just keep out of it. And this is perfect for today's parsha, this week's parsha, right? So what happened was, I want to quote Ravasi. Ravasi, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, says, that's worse than the Dora Mabel. Because she no longer termi dora, my cause is more damage than the Dor HaMabul. I'll prove it to you. Shenema. Take a look at this pasuk and tell me if that doesn't say it to you. Allah v'chachesh v'ratzoach v'ganov v'na'ov paratzu v'damim v'damim nago. Now, the simple meaning of the pasuk seems to be that the Navi is describing the behavior of Klal Yisrael. So Allah v'chachesh means they swear and lie. So, okay, so they'll use swearing in order to lie. Ratzoach, they murder, ganov, they steal, na'ov, they play around with married women. Paratzu just seems to mean, and this has gone beyond all limits. It's like out of hand, out of control. V'damim, v'damim, nagar, so much murder that the blood of one victim is mixing with the blood of the next victim. But that's the simple meaning of the pasuk. In which case has nothing to do with what he said. What in the world says Gemara? My mashma. What makes him say that that pasuk is supposed to prove that somebody doesn't know about getting in condition one? Didn't say anything about that. My mashma. Ah, that's kedimat targum Rav Yosef. You know, Rav Yosef was a big expert in the targum, Yonatan of Tanakh, of Nach. So he says this is the correct targum of the pasuk is like this. Paratsu is from the lashon of Poru, Varovu, Vayishutu, Vayibu, Vayifritsu, we have, right? So the word Vayifritsu, Larosa, Vayifritsu means having children. Paratsu, therefore, he's metargim like this, that Molidin Benin Minashecha Vrehon. Paratsu means they have tons of children. You know why? Because they don't only use their own wives to have children. So they use Nishecha Vrehon. So damim al damim means chovin al chovin mosifim. They're adding unbelievable averas to the burden of sin of Klal Yisrael. Now the pasuk, the very next pasuk continues on. So al kain, because of all of this, te eval haaretz v'umlau ko yoshev ba, the earth will be in mourning, and everyone who lives on the earth will be devastated. Everything will be destroyed. The animals of the field, the birds of the sky, and even the fish in the sea, they'll all die. Now, the Dor HaMabul, you'll notice that nothing was said about the fish. Because all it says, Bikola Shebecharava Meitu. Only things that were on dry land died. V'lo dagim shebeyam, v'lo ha'cham ha'shenken over here, afilo dagim shebeyam. So therefore, you see that these people don't know what they're doing. Rabbis don't know what they're doing. And paskin halachas have to do with kedushin and getting are worse than the Dor HaMabul. They end up causing more destruction than the Dor HaMabul. Says the Gemara, but how do you know that this isn't a list? In other words, given that alo, v'kachesh, kanov, ratzoach, paratz, all of those things together, so then indeed it will destroy the world. But you're claiming like one out of this whole set, maybe it's a single set, that if all of these things together are done, so then it causes this damage. You're coming along and saying just this particular thing of people who paskin wrongly that a woman is asura, muteret. I mean, so maybe it's not referring to that. Maybe it means they have to do everything. No, can't mean that. Because we know that the same idea about only one of these things appears actually in Yirmiyahu. And over there it says, that for the lies, swearing as a lie, that itself destroys the earth. One of these things, the first one, was Allah. Alo v'kachesh. They lie by swearing. So if this is part of a list, then the pasuk in Yirmiyahu wouldn't make sense, right? In other words, how is Hosea saying, okay, if you have all of these things, then it destroys the world. And then Yirmiyahu says, no, alo alone is enough. So you see that it's not a list. It must be each one of them. Says the Gemara, well, not necessarily. Maybe the way to understand it is that we have two separate sets. One, a set of one member, alo v'kachesh, which is one thing, in other words, swearing as a lie. And then we have all of these other things, because they're all connected with a vav, right? So, and, that starts set number two, So okay, we have number one, aloh v'kachesh. Okay, it says Yirmiyahu, that itself is enough. And then we have a list of all these other things that you do, and that's terrible, which includes the paratzu, and that's the people, the rabbis that don't know what they're doing. But, I mean, it doesn't say for paratzu alone. So it's like, oh no, yes it does. Ve'ema alal achud v'anach l'chudeya, maybe it's two separate sets? No. Because you'll notice, there's one very conspicuous vav missing. And that is paratzu. So Inochinami, Allah stands alone. You want to tie it that the Ganov, Ratzoach, Na'ov is another set, and you have to all of them, fine. Let it be. But what is the last part of Pasuk referring to that destroys the world? Paratzu. And there's no Vav there. So therefore the Paratzu stands alone. Which means that on this last thing alone, you have the destruction of the Chayat HaSadeh and the Ge'ayam, and that was the thing that I'm proving to you, that that itself is worse than Dor HaMabul. Because Mi Ketiv U Paratzu, does it say U Paratzu with a Vav? It says Paratzu Ketiv. Okay, that was the second thing they said over in this gathering in memory of Reb Yossi. Reb Masi. No, he said, he's just correcting me. I said, Yosef Matasi.
We had this before, a few days ago, where we said that you know, if you can't pass them, you should stay out.
Yeah, we've had it quite a few times.
Yes, but we had the question there, that how do we know what's enough? And now it seems like it's even more that, I mean, who would want
to... Well, we're not saying what's included. We're not saying what's included. We're just scaring you a bit.
Right, but it seems...
it seems to be worth taking a chumrah stance on this issue.
Yeah. Who would want to be around?
Exactly.
Well.
Honor Yatzvei v'Kamri. So then in this gathering in memory of Rabbasi, they also said the following. Hadetzan, ha'isha she'ivi achatata umeita. So now over here we have a case of a yoledet. The yoledet, after now she becomes Torah, and so she brings a korban chatat and a korban olah. Now, a chatat cannot be brought after death. Over here, she brings her chatat, and she died before she had a chance to bring her korban olah. So it says in the Mishnah, her heirs should bring the korban olah. Yaviu yorshim olata. About which, in the Mishnah, about which Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel explains the Mishnah that this is only referring to a case for who she frishata mechayim. This is only if she had already set aside that animal for a korban olah while she's alive. Avaloi frishata mechayim, if she hadn't done that, lo, then the heirs would not be responsible to see to it that her chiyuv of bringing a korban olah that she wasn't able to do in her lifetime, that that should be done after she dies. Alma, which shows that he holds kasava, she ibuda lav deoraita. So in other words, what Shmuel was quoted as saying over here boils down to the following idea. The concept of a lien. Now remember that an heir certainly does not inherit debts. In other words, you owe a korban olah, it's not my problem. I don't know the korban olah. So if the chiyuv of the korban olah creates a lien on the property, so then the heir inherits the lien, because that's part of his ownership of the property. So then he would have to bring the korban, even though she hadn't set aside the korban. It's nothing to do with her. She has a chiyuv. There's a lien on her property to fulfill her chiyuv. So he would have to bring it. But since Shmuel is saying, no, it's only if the actual physical animal was set aside and he inherits an animal that was given to Hekdesh, that he brings as a korban. Because even though the chatat cannot be brought after she dies, the olah can be brought after she dies. That's all. And this said Rav Asi, Yom Rav Yochanan, I disagree. So this is why it was brought up over here. And Rav Asi, Yom Rav Yochanan says, Afagav Shaloi Fishamichai. It's not true. Even if it wasn't set aside while she was alive, the heir is responsible to go out and buy an animal and bring it as a korban olah, which has very significant implications. I mean, these are obviously the particular case is not a kind of case that comes up every day, but it comes up every day in questions of loans. Is a lien on property that's created by a loan that an heir now has as his own. Is he mechuyev to pay it or not? So if we had written a contract, the standard is when you write a contract, In the contract, the normal nusach of a contract is, all of my property is hereby lien to repayment of this loan. Fine, okay. That's something else. There you went through a legal procedure to create a lien on the property. But over here, no procedure was done. If you do a lien, or you do an oral loan, so there's certainly no shtar that exists as the lien. I want to just clarify one issue. That is, even though you may hold, as he says, that a lien is the right. And he's saying this lien is the right. If she dies, now the heirs have property which has a lien for one carbonola against it because she was chayevet to the carbonola. Don't confuse two different elements of liens. There's liens vis-a-vis heirs, and there's liens vis-a-vis buyers. Theoretically speaking, they're both exactly the same. So if someone had bought her property before she brought the carbonola, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the way Rabbaz is quoting Rabbi Yochanan over here, theoretically speaking, if you hold that she buddha is the oraita, so then the gizbar of Hegdash can come to the guy who bought her property and said, excuse me, sir, but Hegdash has a pre-existing lien on this piece of property. I'm very sorry that you paid money for it, but buyer beware. However, the Rabbanan made a takana that any lien that exists on a property that is not written down as a transaction in a contract is not enforceable. Why? Because otherwise they would destroy the property market. In other words, if you don't have title insurance, so why would anybody buy a piece of property if they can't trace the possible liens that are open against it? How do I know? This woman had a chiyuv to bring an animal to Hegdash 5 years ago. I'm supposed to know that. So I got to start worrying about that. So because of that, the Rabbanim made a takana, and there may be a lien, you can't enforce it. So even Hegdash wouldn't have been able to enforce the lien. Therefore, we're discussing over here Yorshim, particularly, because Yorshim wouldn't make such a takana. An heir gets the property, so he stands now in the shoes of the deceased. So now, if there's a lien, so then he has to fulfill the chiyuv. If there's no lien, he doesn't have a chiyuv to do all the mitzvahs that the deceased was supposed to do. So it's a separate issue.
In the case of the Hegdash, does the transfer onto the property of the original owner, if he sells it, we still hire the owner, the person who...
So that's the question over here. Whether a milvak tuva batorah is considered to be the equivalent of written in a shtar. And it creates a lien. But generally speaking, we protect buyers. So, and therefore, if they don't have access to such a shtar, there's no way for them to protect themselves. But an heir would definitely have to pay. So this is the machlokas that we have over here. So Shmuel is being quoted over here by his Talmud Rav Yehuda as saying that no, if she didn't set aside the animal, then it does not have to be brought. So in other words, Shibuda is not a din diraisa, and there's no halacha that the yorish pays. Mashen Kein Rav Asi, he was quoting Rav Yochanan, is saying no, it doesn't make any difference whether she set aside the animal, didn't set aside the animal. There's nothing to do about it. The heirs are going to have to pay. So clearly, he holds Shibuda is the right. Asks the Gemara, now, since you already brought this up, at the gathering in memory of Rabasi, I mean, this is an old machlokas. Why do we have to have Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan arguing about this esoteric case over here where a woman dies between her oil and her chantas? I mean, this is a very standard case. A guy takes a loan. And we know that there's a machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Shmuel, because here's the case. Rav Shmuel Damer Tavayu. It happens to be that Rav agrees with Shmuel. No, here we're only bringing Shmuel, but Rav agrees with Shmuel in this that Milva Alpe Eino Govem Min Hayorshim V'lo Min HaLekuchot. That if you took a loan, an oral loan, you didn't write it down in a contract. So then, since you did not create a lien by writing it in a contract, there was no instrument of lien creation, and the loan per se does not create a shiba. That's exactly what Shmuel said over here. She's mukhuyevet and olah, so it's owed. So it's owed. But that doesn't mean it's owed against the property. There was no instrument of creating a shiba in the property. So therefore, in that case, I mean, obviously a buyer for sure has nothing to discuss. Because the buyer, anyway, even if there were a lien, we wouldn't have collected it. It's not enforceable because you couldn't trace it. But even a Yoresh, in such a case, you can't collect from. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan, and their Reish Lakish agrees with Rabbi Yochanan, both of them say that no, even a milva alpe, you can be gove, and you can be gove now, bein min ha-yorshim, bein min ha-lekuchot, that you would be able actually to collect a milva alpe from, based on a lien. So now, if that's the case, can you explain to me why you needed to have the argument of this weird case? It's the same argument. No, it's not the same argument. Tzricha. Because look, e itmar baha. Let's say we would have only this case of the loan, the oral loan. So I would say, okay, so baha, in this case, then Shmuel is saying that there's no shibud. Why? I mean, it's an agreement between two people. I borrow 100 rand from you, but it says in the Torah, Joe borrowed 100 rand from Mike. I mean, well, I understand. So, okay, so over there, Shmuel says, well, so where's the creation of a lien? Maybe in a case where the Torah says this woman is Mukhayevet a Karbonayla, so then that's the equivalent of having it written in Shtar. So maybe he would agree to Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. On the other hand, let's say we only had this case. So then, Iyashrin Baha. So then I would say, sure, you know why Rabbi Yochanan said in this case that you have to bring, the way Rabbi Asi was quoting him, you have to bring the carbon oil even though you're an heir, and she hadn't set it aside? That's because Milvak Tuvaba Torah, Tuvaba Shtar Damya. But move over to the question of having a loan. Over there, it's not written in the Torah. So, Ema Be'ach, Modele L'Shmuel. So maybe Yuri would have agreed with Shmuel. So we wouldn't have had both cases. We would not have known that the Machlok and Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan applies in either case. Whether we're talking about a Milva Ketuva B'Torah, or we're talking about a Milva She'ena Ketuva B'Torah. L'maisa, says Rav Papa, neither of them are right, as I already mentioned to you. The halacha is that a Milva Alpeh is, yes, creates a lien, but it's not enforceable against buyers. Not the way you said it. You can be govim in ayorshim, but you cannot be govim in alukuchot. You're govim in ayorshim, that's because indeed you're right in saying, Rabbi Yochanan, that shibud is the oraita. But in a govim in alukuchot, there's no way you can enforce it against a buyer, and that's because of the takana drabana, the let lake kala. It has no way to be traced. How are you going to know? So if it's in a shtar, shtarot are always traceable. Because they needed to be witnessed, signed, and now the Bezdin has a record of shtarot, or people know about shtarot, they're talking about it. But something like this is not traceable. Okay, so now we know the Ma'amorim of Rabasi, which of course is not directly Nogea or Sugya. The only part that was Nogea was the question of the Shavaputa. By the Isha to the Sada, that was the only thing that had some remote connection to our Masechta. And now we can go back and continue the Pirush of the Gemara on our Mishnah. We're finally at the end of the Mishnah. The closing of the Mishnah is that a woman is kona et atzma beget v'mitat habaal. So if she gets either a get or if the husband dies, she is now free and clear. Okay. A get, says the Gemara, I know about. If you have a get, it says beferush the Torah, v'katavla, sefer kritut, v'shilchami beito, and so on. And then it says, v'yatzava itala ishacher, she gets married to somebody else. Obviously, a get, that's the point. It's matira l'kol adam. But how do you know that if her husband dies, that she's mutara to get married? Mitat habaal, I mean, where does it say in the Torah that if a husband dies, his wife can remarry? Oh, what do you mean? I mean, it's logical, isn't it? Svarahu, I mean, who asra? It's his presence and relationship that creates the isser. So, I mean, if he's dead, so who sharta? So now it's fine. So the Gemara, well, that's not very logical. Because if by the same token, you could say that any of the arayot are also, why is she not allowed to marry her father-in-law? Because she's married to her husband. So now her husband drops dead, so she can marry her father-in-law. I mean, he was the one who created the Yisr. It's the same logic. And yet we know that the arayot do not change just because the individual was the source of the relationship that asr the erva dies. So eshet ish is one of the arayot. So who's to say that just because he dies, so now all of a sudden the heir of Ar becomes Mutarot? So you see that that doesn't follow logically in the parasha of Arayot. What you're saying in the Mishnah is that his death is an actual kinyan that's given over to her to be in her own rishos, and therefore it doesn't leave any kind of lasting impact, even though it does in terms of the Arayot that came from out of that marriage, right? Then I need to know how you know that. So for Arayot asar lu velo shari lu, over there his presence created the Yisr, but his death doesn't remove the Yisr. Ooh, that's a bad one, says the Gemara. Right, okay, let's take a different approach now. Ella, I'll tell you. V'diyoma rachmana yivama she'en labanim asura. Okay, we got the whole parasha of Yavama, a guy dies without children, so now his wife has to go and get married to his brother in order to be making shame for the deceased, right? So, okay, so what does that mean? That's only because she has no children. But if she did have children, then she would be Mutaret. So if she's a Yavama, so it says, oh, she can't get married to anybody, right? Lo te nefesh ameta chutza le'izar, you can't get married to anybody else. Okay, yeah, because Yavama Yavama Aleha. But suppose it would be no Yavama Yavama Aleha, so then she can get married to whoever she pleases. There you go. Does anyone know? How do you know that that's the case? Maybe the point is that if she has no children, then she's asura to the whole world, which is but she's mutera to the Yavam. But if yesh la banim, how about if she has children, then maybe she's asura to everybody. In other words, do you not agree that if a man dies, his wife can't marry, and he doesn't have children, his wife cannot marry anybody except the Yavam? Okay, so that means that if he has children, she can marry everyone? No, it means she can't marry anyone, even the other. Well, where do you come off saying that that pasuk is telling me, and it's only because there's a Yavam, therefore lo tehei eshet hamet achutza. Eshet hamet can never be achutza, that's it. She's imprisoned by her state of widowhood. Except that there's a Yavam, then she goes to the Yavam. But like this, she can't marry anybody. I mean, maybe. How do you know how to read the pasuk? It's definitely taking away all of your assumptions, right? Everything you always knew. Yeah, that's amazing. Now we're going to figure it out. So that's no good either. So maybe if yesh labanim l'kulei amanam yisra. All right, let's try a different approach. Ella. That's a cute one. Midiomer Achmana Almana the Kohen Gadol Asura. Okay. A Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry an Almana. Now, I mean, that obviously means that somebody else can marry an Almana. So if you're not a Kohen Gadol, you're only a Kohen Hedjit. For that matter, you're not a Kohen at all. So then it would be okay to marry an Almana. Or maybe that's, I mean, it's pretty clear, right? So Hol a Kohen Hedjot. So for anything less than a Kohen Gadol, even a Kohen Hedjot, an Almana is Muteret. Not necessarily. Maybe there's an Isser Lav on a Kohen Gadol, and for everybody else in the world, there's an Isser Ase. Where would this Ase come from exactly? So Tosfos says this Ase would come from the idea of the Davak B'Ishto V'lo B'Eshet Chavero. So since this was Eshet Chavero, and we haven't shown that we're able to remove the Eshet Chavero, so that is an inferred lotase. You must stick to your wife and not to your friend's wife. So that's a lava b'mechlal asay. A lava b'mechlal asay is an asay. Stick to your own wife. Okay, so maybe that's still true. How do we know that that changed? Or Rashi says maybe the asay is, since it says v'katav la sefer kritut v'shuchami beito. So only the one that you gave la sefer kritut, that's the one, or the one that was v'shilcha mibeito, that's the one v'alcha v'ayta le'ish acher. But if she didn't get a sefer kritut, so then again the implication is, again it's inferred, so it's a lava b'meklal asay. So a lava b'meklal asay is an asay. Or the Ritva says, what are you making something so complicated? She has a cheskes iser. So what was matter of cheskes iser? It doesn't doesn't mean it's not say literally that you have to trace a pasuk that says specifically. An assay just means, look, I mean, maybe it took off the Yisra Eshesish with Chiyav Misa. But how do you know that it's actually Matir? So we say assay meaning the least possible Chiyav. But it's still, I mean, how do you know that a Cheskes Yisra just disappears? Doesn't there have to be something positive that changes it? Says the Gemara, I don't understand what you're saying. I mean, where would this assay be different? I assay my avidite. I don't understand. Are we agreed that she's no longer an Ashes Ish and there's no chiyav in sleeping with her? That we're agreed? You're not going to be chayav Nisa. I mean, we're not answering her to Kohen Gadol with an Isra Lav, but there's really a chiyav Misa because he's sleeping with an Ashes Ish, even her husband. We're all agreed. There's no husband, there's no chiyav Misa. That for sure we see from the Kohen, right? Okay, so now so you're saying, but maybe it left the residual Cheskas Isser, or the residual Vadovak Bishop. Where'd you get that from? Look, either you believe that the presence of the husband, the life of the husband, creates a heter. So if it creates the heter, so it took away all of the elements of her marriage. How does it work? By parts. If you're telling me, well, it doesn't help to remove the Cheskas Yisra, so then Tukma b'milta kamaita, so then she should still be chayev in a chayev misa. How can it be halfway? What kind of question is that? Alamala, we're not. We find lots of examples like that. Afikte mimita v'ukimta al asay. Why can't it have changed the situation sufficiently to remove the chiyav mita, but now to leave a residual mitzvah saseh? You want an example? I'll give you an example. What happens? We have a carbon that's pasul. Okay, now, if you go ahead and you use that carbon for non-hegdish things, you'll be chayav me'ila, right? You're also not allowed to do any gizava avodah. You can't shear the wool off of such an animal. You can't use such an animal for pulling a plow. Okay. Now you go ahead and you give a pidyon to Hekdesh so that you buy off the animal from Hekdesh. What's the din there? There's no longer an Isra Me'ila, but there remains an Isra of Gizava Avodah. So why don't you say, well, look, you know, I mean, if the pidyon took off the Hekdesh, then it took off the Hekdesh. How could only half take off the Hekdesh? I mean, why not? You jump to conclusions, then you ask it to me as a question. Don't jump to conclusions, stop asking dumb questions. So what's the problem? We see from the din of the Kohen Gadol that clearly there's no longer an Isra Eshesish in terms of the Chiyav Misa. Fine. Now you're telling me it removes, I don't know, show me. Show me where it says that a woman whose husband dies is free to go and marry whoever she wants without anything that remains yet from the original situation of her marriage, her Cheskas Yisra. Where was the kinyan that was given back to her? The Mishnah says, Konat Atzma. Let's just see this inside. So, Midadavi Apsulia Mukdashim, Mikara, initially, before you give the pinyan, Itbu Me'ila, Viasir Begizav Avodah. You have two separate Isurim. Okay. Parkino, now you went ahead, give the pinyan. So, what's the din? Me'ila let, but there's no longer Chiyav Me'ila. However, there's still Begizav Avodah Asirim. So forget about that, okay? Next case. Okay, next proof is like this. Ella. Midiyam Akra, since the Torah says about a soldier who's going out to war, so that if he now had gotten married and had not yet been able to take his wife, so it says he must be sent home from the battlefield. Why? Pen yamut b'milchama, because maybe he will die in the war. The isha cher yikachena, and another man will take his wife, and that's terrible. That's a tragedy. We don't want something like that to happen. Send him home. So, I mean, if it's saying over here that another guy will take his wife, so apparently it's okay for her to get married. Matkilo Rishisha Breda Ravidi, oh yeah? And what if the other man is his brother who survives him and is the Yavam? And that's what it's referring to. And boy, that is a tragedy, let me tell you. Right? So, and maybe that's all it's referring to. So, Ema Man Acher, the Yavam. Omer Vashi, that's ridiculous. State Shavos, but for two reasons that's ridiculous. First of all, the Yavam is not called an Acher. I mean, the whole point of a Yavam is he's taking the place of the original Baal to you. Why would you call him an Acher? Were you referring only to him? That's the craziest way of referring to him. Did you just say V'achiv Yikachena? I mean, what's this Acher? That's number one. Secondly, take a look at the story of Gerishim. It says over there, V'yatza V'ayta Le'isha Acher. So she goes, gets married now, after she gets a get from the first husband, gets married to another guy. Then it says, Usnea Ha'isha Acharon. Her next husband hates her. V'katav La Sefer Kritut, he writes a get for her. Oh, I'm supposed to be able to continue giving you stuff without eyes in the back of my head. This is how it all started. See, figures, if you sit in the back, you might as well not come at all.
school visits.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, Amuta Ishachra. So what does it give you? Two options. Either through Sefer Kritut or through his death. And then it discusses whether now the first husband is allowed to take her back. But in any event, Torah puts together the get with his death. So obviously, it's comparing now death to divorce. Just like Gerushin is Sharia v'gomeret, Gerushin now is Matir, and it's a complete after, that's for sure, because it says, Vaitali Shacher, she married anybody else. So too, af mita, Sharia v'gomeret. So too does Mita create a complete, absolute heter for her.
The
Hekesh is Mita the Gerashin.
Yeah, but I'm saying from Ishacheret, it says over there about when he goes to war and he won't come back, send him home because perhaps he'll get married to a Ishacher.
But you're asking a new kasha, or you're trying to explain the Gemara in this way? He's just saying that since over here the Torah is saying clearly that there will be no difference to any other person because the second husband, Snea Isha Acharon, so that can't be the meaning when you're telling me only a Yavam would be able to take her. Because anybody is able to take her, which we see from Oki Yamut.
Why the first sentence is not good? Yishacher yikachena. Pina mudu b'im nechama, yishacher yikachena. I said Yavam.
So
Yavam is not the Acher.
Right. So Rashi says, if you take a look, that the simple meaning of the pasuk, that's about lo yuchal ba'ala rishon, that somebody else would be able, is because we could ask the same question. In other words, maybe indeed somebody else would take, but there would still be an Israel. All you're proving is that Kedushin is Chal. But we don't want to prove that Kedushin is Chal. We don't prove that Kedushin is Muteret. In order to prove Kedushin is Muteret, that we want to go over to here. Right? So that Taina we would be able to say on any Raya that you bring, okay? It would be a terrible thing. It might happen. That doesn't necessarily mean that l'chatchila, that's where we're being matir. Okay, so I'd rather bring to you a pasuk that makes it absolutely clear. All right, excellent, gentlemen. Been fun.